Hey everyone, it's Nick.
And Lala.
If you've been listening to Scene and you like what you hear,
please share us with your friends.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at Scene the Podcast.
Write a review and just tell us what you think.
And help make this work sustainable by supporting Scene the Podcast on Patreon.
We need our beautiful community and we cannot do this without you.
Pulling back the curtain of silence.
And learning what freedom feels like. I'm Nick.
And I'm Lala.
This is Scene.
Brown-eyed activism.
Healing at the intersections. Solitude has been difficult for me in the past. I mean, humans are social creatures that need interactions with other people, love, attention, affection. I know, you know, my own needs include these things, and I share those basic traits with, I think, like most people.
Every human.
Yeah. But the act of being alone and really just like the state of solitude are topics that are really dear to my heart. So I wanted to take some time in this episode to explore these themes a little bit further, since they've actually played like a significant part in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So in this episode, we're going to start off by exploring how being alone and in solitude is an inherently feminist issue. Because it is.
Okay.
I want us to talk about some of the things that complicate our ability to engage in solitude and being alone. And then I'd love for us to share some of the strengths and opportunities that we can find by creating self-intimacy. I don't know if that's a real phrase, but I'm going to say that.
Because
It's like being okay with being with yourself. Before we get into that, though, I want to check in with you and just find out, like, how are you feeling discussing this today?
I'm excited.
Yeah,
I'm really excited to hear from you about what your experiences are around these things. I definitely, stillness and solitude are really meaningful things for me.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I'm excited to share.
Awesome. Well, I know that for a lot of us, we fear loneliness, and solitude often mm-hmm. means being alone with our own thoughts, our own memories, our experiences. If we've experienced trauma, this can be really tough and painful. I spend a lot of time in my own head. My natural tendency is to be analytical and introspective and overthink things. Sometimes this brings me to places where I even begin to doubt my own thoughts, my own feelings, especially the painful and traumatic ones, especially the memories that I wish I could forget. So being alone doesn't always present as an opportunity for positive introspection for everyone. I want to just acknowledge that.
Absolutely.
However, I do think that there's another side to being alone with ourselves that's quite necessary for our own personal healing work. And like we've spoken about in previous episodes, personal healing is intricately linked with collective liberation work. So I think these things are kind of all feed each other in some
way. Absolutely.
So for me, I think it's something worth exploring and worth sharing about, especially when it comes to our own personal growth. That requires us to sit with this shit, you know, sit with ourselves, sit in stillness, sometimes sit alone. And while I have a complicated relationship with being alone, I'm of the belief that when we can, we should make opportunities to be alone.
Mm-hmm.
Lala, what's your relationship with being alone and occupying the state of solitude? Do you welcome it, or has it been something that you've kind of tended to avoid altogether? I feel like I know the answer, but
this is not going to surprise you.
Oh.
I love being alone.
Yeah.
I'm very much introverted. I'm really far on that end of the spectrum. So
mm-hmm.
I need a lot of alone time to recharge and just to process my thoughts.
Yeah.
I've also been single for a long time. So I'm just used to having a lot of space for myself. Like, I like to have time to watch the shows I want to watch, to be on Twitter and feel like I'm connecting to the world in that way.
Yeah.
But in my own space with my own thoughts. And I also enjoy like my physical space. Like, I love sleeping alone and waking up alone. That's my favorite time.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. Remember how we talked about on a previous episode, like
chronically single.
I was going to sing that at you, like chronically single.
That's true.
But no, I think it's awesome that you're in a place where you appreciate it, because, you know, I think so many of us feel all sorts of fucked upness about being alone. I know for myself, I love being around other people. I'm a natural, I think I'm like a mix, like an ambivert. I definitely get a lot of energy from being around my people. Not all people. It's
right.
only select people
yes.
that I, you know, really get energy from. I know that I'm dependent on and connected to other people. And this is healthy for me, because in my own relationship with my partner, Nolan, he's gone for 3 months out of the year every year.
Yeah.
So every summer it becomes very acutely aware to me that I need to be in connection with other people because I'm missing my person. But, you know, just like we always do, I really want to complicate this idea of aloneness and solitude, give it some more nuance, because I think what I'm talking about isn't just about how we get energy necessarily, but, you know, the bigger constructs that are rooted in being alone and being in solitude. I believe that this is a deeply feminist, womanist issue, because if we're being honest, which we always are, keep the shit 100 all the time.
Yes.
Women of color and non-binary people of color are so often going it alone. And so, like, our experiences are both gendered and racialized just to start. And then depending on other facets of our identity, like class, sexuality, ability, and other structural oppressions associated with those facets, so many of us, you know, our normal is to be alone, to be one of the few. I'm so used to being, you know, like the only Black person.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're used to being one of the only brown people growing up in a place that you grew up.
Absolutely.
In workplaces and educational settings, I'm so used to being like the only Black friend for my friends. Oof. So I'm indicting y'all on this shit right now. Find some more Black friends too. So despite being around lots of people in day-to-day life, I still feel a sense of loneliness sometimes, because Black people are few and far between in a place like Vancouver.
Yeah, and being like a queer person of color in Vancouver, there's actually a lot of us in Vancouver, but we're pretty scattered.
Yeah.
Like, it feels very alone for us.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sitting in a room with you right now, so we're together. But like, I'm fully with you. It feels...
There aren't enough spaces for us. So it just feels like we don't know how to find each other. We don't know how to find community a lot of the time.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then like on an intra-community level, so many women and non-binary people of color are very, very acclimated with the experience of, oh, this isn't for me or about me. You know, have you ever been keenly aware in conversations or discourse that is supposedly about women that, you know, we're actually really talking about white women?
Oh, God, yes.
Or, you know, how about that sense of alienation that comes from recognizing that when the LGBTQ term is evoked, oftentimes it's really just code for a specific identity, which is like cis, gay, white man?
Ugh, yeah, like, why not just say G? but yeah, that's so real. Like, that feels like a really painful kind of aloneness. I love being alone, but that's
a different thing.
Yeah, it's like being invisible. It's like you're the only one who even notices that you're missing.
Yeah, it's the isolation piece. Yeah. It's a difference, I think.
Yes.
Or like, even though the conversation might be about Black people or with Black people or brown people, who we're actually talking about is Black men or brown men. We're not talking about brown and Black women and non-binary folks.
Yeah, and if we try to, suddenly the conversation changes. Suddenly it's divisive. It's tense, or a lot of the people are just not there anymore.
100%. And I know for a lot of women of color, I can speak for myself specifically, that we simultaneously feel this need to defend Black and brown men against racism that they experience. But at the same time, those Black and brown men might not be as reciprocal in standing up for us as we experience misogynoir or gender-based racism. And also, there's an entire Black feminist anthology on intersectionality called All the Women Are White, All the Blacks Are Men, But Some of Us Are Brave.
Yes. And I think so this is a thing.
Yes, this is a fucking thing. And I think, you know, that title pretty much sums up the reality that for so many of us, we're used to going it alone. We're used to having to be like the only one of one.
Yeah, it's a default.
Absolutely. And largely, this isn't a choice, you know, us going it alone, us being in isolation, like you were just saying. Mm-hmm. In the examples that I just shared, for the most part, we don't actually have control over our situations of being in those alone, lonely places. But that's nothing new, because we know that we live in a world with systems much greater than ourselves that impact our ability to live our daily lives.
Yeah, it doesn't make it any easier.
No, not at all. But I think it's helpful when we think about things in like a greater context to understand like how we fit into it, as opposed to like what's wrong with me.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? It makes you realize I'm not isolated because there's something wrong with me as an individual.
Yeah, we get a lot of messaging about being alone. I think women in general get messaging about being alone. There are stereotypes of loneliness. There are real intentional and systematic efforts to ensure loneliness. There are forces at play that tell us how we're supposed to fill the void of being alone. There are risks that exist when we dare to establish our own solitude or, you know, be alone. And I have receipts, so I'm gonna give you some more examples. There's definitely like tons of misogynistic and patriarchal narratives about feminists who, you know, are all going to die alone, angry and bitter. Mm-hmm. It's like we have this aversion to being alone, but it's always in the context of heterosexual coupledom and partnership and baby making, you know. Lala, I know you kind of wanted to complicate the tired ass framing of being alone with respect to, you know, being with a man, for example.
Yeah, it was that idea that I might not have a man near me. That doesn't mean I'm alone. Some of us love women.
Yes.
And some of us love non-binary people. And it's so frustrating, the focus on heterosexuality and the extreme hyper-focus on a certain type of relationship as mm-hmm. being the only important thing. And my person, my partner, we don't have that kind of relationship. Like, yeah. we don't have a sexual relationship. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't make our relationship any less valid or any less important. That doesn't make her less my person or less my partner.
Right.
And so it's just, yeah, it's frustrating that if I'm not married to a man, then I'm somehow alone, as if I couldn't have a million other incredibly complex, fulfilling,
relationships.
Beautiful, yeah, important, deep relationships.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's so interesting. I appreciate you sharing that.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's this way that loneliness is crafted by the state. I think if we look at the isolation and loneliness that has been employed by the criminal justice system in America, for example, we can see that strategically and by design, mass incarceration, it has intended to remove Black men from their communities and households, to weaken Black family units, which literally leaves Black women to be alone, to pick up the pieces and like hold their communities together.
I think another important one to talk about is the quote unquote child welfare system,
mm-hmm.
because of the ways that, I mean, Canada over generations has systematically broken up Indigenous families.
Yes.
And I'm just thinking of the incredibly intense pain that parents go through when their children are ripped away from them.
Yeah.
And the devastating aloneness of that,
mm-hmm.
and how that leaves so many Indigenous people. And then, of course, the aloneness of those children who have been ripped away from their parents. So
this idea that loneliness is something that just happens between you and I, is we have to dispel that myth,
right.
because it's bigger than just that. There's an intentionality to creating loneliness amongst specific groups of people. So race plays a role in who is like forcibly made lonely: brown folks, Black folks, Indigenous folks. And then also who gets sympathy or concern for being alone, namely white women. There's a lot of concern about white women being old spinsters. That's
right.
a huge thing. We can see that there's a different attitude and intention with who should be alone and who's worthy of community. Thinking critically about how capitalism operates, I think the world also tells us lots and lots about the things we supposedly need. Things we need to buy, food we need to consume, experiences we need to have. We know that lots of these things are fueled by innate needs that we might have as human social creatures, but we also know that these are things that have been created by people who want to sell us things to be imminently wealthy for forever and ever.
You're not loved unless you have a diamond.
Absolutely. Like these ridiculous ass shits. And then I think going back to like the interpersonal, there's the reality that if I'm walking down the street minding my own business with headphones in, let's say, I will likely, quote unquote, make somebody angrier by, you know, not responding to street harassment, because there's this sense that you can't even be alone enjoying your own company in public mm-hmm. spaces sometimes as women, so often as women, actually.
Well, and actually, though, too, in order to be alone as a woman, I sometimes need headphones as a defense.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I just want to walk home and not be listening to anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can actually hear the things that men say to me.
Oof.
And I'm like, no, thank you. Like, I have to have headphones in just to not
have
hear.
To deal with that shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like I can't just actually be alone with my thoughts. I need to have the company or whatever is in my headphones to drown out the fucking street harassment.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So yes, in case you thought that this was not, you know, a feminist issue,
yeah.
it's deeply feminist, because I think everything is a feminist issue.
Absolutely.
Lala, one thing that we discussed ahead of this show was challenging this kind of like, I don't need anybody trope, which I think is really common in an approach to embrace being alone. Because we had a conversation on this and I had joked about like, I don't need anybody. And you're like, I don't know. I think that's not a great thing to say, because we need people, right? But I think solitude is like a balance. well, sure, a definition of solitude, actually. Maybe that's helpful. So this is a working definition that I found from Michael Schrainer of Evolution Counseling. Solitude is usually actively sought after and is a personal choice that comes from inner yearning. Isolation is usually actively avoided and is forced from the outside. Solitude allows for expansion and freedom of thought, providing the chance to soar above the ordinary in order to come back into the world feeling refreshed and invigorated. Isolation contracts the walls and makes a prison, draining the will and leaving you exhausted. And I think this idea of like, I don't need anybody, I think that's not true. Oftentimes when we say we don't need anybody is when we desperately need people the most, but we're just pushing people away because Absolutely. Of other things.
Yeah.
So with this isolation piece, I think it's really interesting because it's saying that isolation is forced from the outside. I wonder if you think that's true, because I think I've always had the belief that people are able to self-isolate, you know, remove themselves from situations and really become their own sort of island. Do you think that it's a thing where isolation is just forced?
Well, I guess I think that we are inherently social creatures, and I think that we're born to be in relationship with each other and to be in community with each other. So I think that when we're not in relationship or in community, it's because something has gotten in the way. And so that could be a lot of things. Like we talked a little bit about the systems that can get in the way.
Yeah.
It can also be on more of an interpersonal level where we've experienced a lot of maybe bullying as a child.
Yeah.
And then you find yourself feeling a lot of shame. You find yourself not trusting other people. Mm-hmm. So you could say that if as an adult that person is withdrawing into themselves, that could be their choice, but it is because something got in the way.
Yeah.
I think it can get complicated at a certain point where it didn't start out as a choice, but now it is, or it started out as a choice, but now it isn't.
Yeah.
It gets complicated in that way, or the lines get blurred maybe, but I don't think it's just something within us that would make us do that. I think it's something that's happened or something that's gotten in the way.
Yeah, yeah. I'm with you on that. And then I'm curious your thoughts about individualism and when retreating into self and shutting people out or not being open to receiving from community becomes to our detriment.
I think that is, like you said, individualism. I think that's capitalism. It's neoliberalism. It's the pulling yourself.
What does that mean, do you think?
It's the idea of like pulling yourself up by your bootstraps and the idea, you know, that you have to be productive in order to earn your keep, and the idea that if you work hard, you're rewarded with enough. Like if you work hard, then you have enough to live well.
Yeah. Going it alone almost is like the thing that is like this gold star.
It's like a badge of honor. Yeah, it's like I'm a worthy human being because I did what worthy human beings do, which is I worked so hard that I had all of the things that I need and I didn't need help from anybody else, which is inherently ridiculous because we live in systems. Nothing that we do is just us. Like we buy food from stores or we live in houses that someone else built, or even if we built our own house and we live on a farm, I guarantee that you didn't make every single thing that you've ever touched and that you didn't spring up out of your own imagination, right? Somebody gave birth to you. So we all owe our existence and our lives and our livelihoods to other people. It's just that some people are maybe a little bit more in denial about that fact.
Yeah,
I think they're self-made.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point, like this idea of being self-made and this idea of picking yourself up from the bootstraps, which essentially, you know, shames people from requiring social safety nets, let's say, or from needing any kind of help from the state or anyone else.
Yeah.
And I think it begs the question of like, so when is it okay to have needs that go beyond yourself? And like, I don't think
always.
That always no of course I think that's a rhetorical question, but when those kinds that kind of rhetoric is used it's like, are we all supposed to be like only looking out for ourselves? That's the piece where we can kind of go down the isolation route, where it's like, I'm only focused on self. And there's nothing wrong with being focused on yourself if you're also aware of, like you said, you're in connection with other people.
Yeah.
We need it. Even if we deny ourselves that, or if we think we don't need it, we still do.
Yeah, yeah. And I think sometimes we need to focus mainly on ourselves if we're really at a survival state.
Yeah.
Where it's like you have to pour all of your energy into your own survival.
Mm-hmm.
But so often, a lot of the people who are most focused on themselves are people who have way, way, way more than they need. It's like the wealthy, like, white cishet men who are just so wrapped up in their own experience that they don't care about anyone around them.
Yeah, and then it's also interesting because you'll simultaneously find the people who are the most generous and giving of their time and the most engaged with community to be the people who have the least, but like they have time to offer and they create capacity within themselves to be in connection with other people and give whatever they can give.
Yeah, honestly, all the time I have queer and trans people of color sitting in front of me in my office feeling so guilty for doing anything for themselves or taking up any spaces in the world because they just feel like other people are so much more deserving and they don't want to give to themselves because they feel like other people need it more.
Right.
And it's so heartbreaking because it's like, no, you need to take up space. Like, you deserve to
focus on yourself.
Focus on yourself. Yeah. Like, give yourself some of the care that you give to other people because the people who need to be focusing less on themselves are not the ones, like, sitting in therapist's office so
distraught
over other people suffering.
As you're saying that, I'm thinking about the ways that people who have immense amounts of privilege are focusing on themselves. It looks very different than the ways that people who don't benefit from structural privilege are focusing on themselves.
Totally.
Right? Like,
totally.
The ways that a person who is like a cishet white man might be focusing on themselves is being that go-getter who's like trying to kill the next quarter and trying to make the most amount of money and trying to do this and da 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 da. I'm, you know, projecting a bunch of
consumption.
Just like make, you know,
buying things.
Yeah, let's just say you're definitely part of capitalism, let's say. But the way that somebody who has a lot of barriers, the focusing on self looks like trying their best to provide for their like families, trying their best to create something that is like safe and for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just
making sure they eat every day.
Yeah.
Like, honestly.
Yeah. I just want to differentiate because I think I don't want to demonize this idea of focusing on self and being alone to do that work for yourself. I just think it's like, what are you doing? Are you trying to focus on yourself so that you create a life for you and only you, or are you focusing on yourself so that you're able to go out into the world afterwards and like pour back into other people?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with material comfort, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with being happy, but I would hope that your own happiness and fulfillment is going to allow you to be supportive to other people in the world, or use that strength and resilience that you're developing in order to fight for other people to have the same thing.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm totally with you. I wonder how much individualism of Western culture gets in the way of our ability to go out and look at other people and say, like, let me use the things that I have from working on myself, from focusing on myself to like help you. Because I don't think that our culture really prioritizes that or champions this idea of like taking care of others. And we can see this all across like most Western cultures, where the idea of picking yourself from your bootstrap and like being almost upset when people aren't able to do that. I'm curious of your thoughts when it comes to like how our culture is enmeshed in like focusing on just me and not focusing on others.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like our culture does both things, but just like in all the wrong ways.
Mm.
So there's a lot of self-indulgence, and then there's a lot of like martyrdom. So there's a lot of just, the selfishness and the not caring about how you affect
others.
Your community.
Yeah.
Instead of a focus on caring for yourself in a way that would actually make you a healthy member of your community who could show up in the world in ways that are supportive, you know?
Yeah, I think there's a difference between caring for yourself and indulging in yourself.
Exactly. And then when it comes to other people, there's a healthy like community care where we're all interdependent and we show up for people in the ways that they need and they show up in the ways that we need, again, caring for each other in a real way. And then there's some people have to be martyrs where, you know, some people give nothing and then other people are expected to have no boundaries and be in constant servitude, whether that's, you know, mothers doing 99% of the active parenting work or people of color doing all of the emotional labor, all the things that we do, emotional labor, or just in general being in service roles to white people.
Yeah.
So it's this very like imbalanced
system.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that for sure. I think for a long time I was of the like, I don't need anybody kind of approach. I don't even really know if in that state of mind, I was able to take a look and understand how I was relating to other people, because I actually wasn't tuned in. When you say that you don't need anybody, you're decidedly not tuning into how you affect other people, how you relate to other people, because you've made it your business to think it doesn't matter how you do. Mm-hmm. You are an island unto yourself. And that's the thing. We're like never just an island unto ourselves, even if we feel that way. Because I think there's a difference between like loneliness is like our perceptions of how we feel in relation to other people. Isolation is like the state of I don't spend time with enough people around me.
Yeah.
And like our perceptions of loneliness are connected to isolation, but I don't think they're one in the same. And I think sometimes we can create our own loneliness by virtue of decisions that we're making to just say, I don't need people.
Yeah, you absolutely. Know? And I think often we are not giving ourselves enough credit. Like we're not seeing our own power and our own importance, because a lot of times we think that it doesn't matter to other people whether we show up or not. And we don't even realize like how important we are to other people or how much power we actually could have in the world.
Yeah, man, that's interesting. I think about that like the more longer that I've been in my relationship and the more summers that my partner's been away, the more I've had to brush up against this, on one hand, a desire to like just become a total recluse. And then I realize that that's actually like so much more harmful for me, and it's more harmful for the relationships that I need to sustain myself through that season, because it feels like he's gone and so I'll just keep to myself. But in actuality, what I need to do is like expand more. And it's funny how like sometimes the thing that we need is the thing that we avoid. The people that we want to spend time with is what we avoid the most. And I'm actually just more curious about why. I think sometimes it has to do with feeling like our desires or our wants or what we need is beyond what people can give us, and feeling that fear that if you share that, oh, I need this, or if you just like show up and, you know, you're like, hey, I need to be around other people, that people are going to disappoint you. I think that's
like the risk of vulnerability.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think for myself, I've been so aware of how much more brave I need to be when it comes to realizing when I'm going into that slippery slope of isolation, especially when Nolan's away, how much I need to clock it and know it and then do the complete opposite of what I want to do, which is indulge that feeling of loneliness and isolation, and try my best to be around other people because that's what is more nourishing for me.
Yeah. How do you notice when you're crossing from maybe solitude into isolation?
I think I notice, that's a very easy answer. When I'm spending more time on social media, feeling worse and worse about myself, about not doing the things that people are doing, then I know I got to go out and do some stuff with people. I think once I start to resign myself to this idea that the day's just going to happen and I will let it just happen, and I don't have any like agency over it, is when I know that I need to be around people.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think I judge myself for not being better at solitude. You know, it's not helpful.
Yeah. But I think the key there is that you talked about being on social media and it starts to make you feel bad for not doing those things, or you feel like you're just helpless and the day's just happening to you and you have no control over it.
Yeah.
Because I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with the thing itself. Like I was saying earlier, one of the things I love about being alone is like being on Twitter.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that makes me feel bad about being alone and going through Twitter. Like I feel fed by it when I'm doing it.
Yeah.
But for you, it sounds like it's because it's something that's happening almost mindlessly, or it's giving away like what you actually want to be doing. Because when I'm, you know, looking at people's Instagram stories, I see them out, there is no part of me that's like, oh, I should have been there.
FOMO.
I'm like, oh, that looks really fun.
Yeah.
But I, you know, so I think your feelings are telling you in those scenarios that what you really want to be doing is connecting with people.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think basically I feel like that point about solitude being something that allows us to like go back to self and then be invigorated. I can be alone for a few hours a day and feel really, really nourished and awesome. But once I cross out of that boundary, it requires me to make a decisive action and have like agency over myself.
Yeah.
Which I think is like the for me, it's been like the marking between solitude or loneliness is like, do I have agency over this? Like, am I choosing to be alone right now? And is it making me feel good? Or am I choosing to be alone and it's making me feel worse?
Yeah. And that's why it's so important to stay tuned in enough to notice when your system's telling you, okay, it's time to shift gears. Because it's going to look different for everybody, because we do have different needs in any given moment. And we do have different personality types or different places on the scale of introversion and extroversion.
Yeah.
So it's about being able to stay tuned into ourselves and listen to, is this a moment where I could use some time to reground myself in myself,
yeah,
and really tune inwards? Or is it a time for me to connect outwards?
Yeah, totally.
It's very
and
personal.
Actually, totally. I was actually going to ask, my next question was, in your therapist's work, what are some things that you share with your clients when it comes to like being able to or getting comfortable with being alone or solitude or sitting with ourselves?
I think it's very personal, because I think it just depends on what comes up for you in those moments. Because there are some people where if they're alone with their own thoughts, some painful feelings or memories can come up. Mm-hmm. And so then it's about finding tools to cope with that, or tools to take care of yourself in those moments.
Yeah.
But then for other people, maybe they love being alone and it's more of, you know, an interject that they should be doing something else.
Mm-hmm.
So then that's where I try to really just empower people to just be where they are.
Yeah.
To do what feels good for them or what they're able to do in that moment.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, yeah. It does make sense. And I think what it sounds like you're saying is that there's a balance that you need to kind of establish for yourself that is going to be inherently yours. And like doing what's right for you might mean like today you spend time alone and tomorrow you spend time alone, but on the third day you go and spend time with family or spend time with friends or be in some sort of connection. But there's like this ability to have balance, because we're not always one or the other. I think there's this like mix of the needs that we have and that shifts on a day to day. But
yeah, and we can give ourselves some structures to support the things that we need to do for ourselves, even if they're hard. So there might be times where you know that you need a little bit of time to yourself, but for whatever reason, it's very hard to give that to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be like, start small. It can be like, okay, we're going to do this for 5 minutes. And then that's it. We're going to set a timer at the end of 5 minutes. Then we're going to go do something easier. And that can be really helpful. Just start with where you are. Do something achievable.
Yeah. And then not being hard on yourself too.
Exactly.
I think that's a thing, because judging myself for not being good at solitude or, you know,
yeah,
or whatever it is, it's like once we're in this state of judgment, I don't think it's helpful. And it's actually more difficult to get out of that frame of mind.
Absolutely. It's so important to approach ourselves with friendly curiosity, like we always say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. I'm curious if you've always felt like being alone is something that is comfortable for you, or.
I've always spent a lot of time alone, but I think when I was growing up, I think I experienced it as less of a choice.
Okay.
I felt very socially isolated.
Yeah.
And I felt like there was something wrong with me, definitely.
Yeah.
So I do think that it took quite a bit of time, maybe as an adult, to get out of that mentality that if I was alone, it was because there was something wrong with me, or because I, you know, was rejected or didn't have people to be with.
Yes.
And yeah. And
I totally am with you on that.
Yeah. So then once I was able to realize how much I love it, though, yeah, I do get a lot of joy out of being alone. And something that can be really powerful about it, at least for me, is I don't know if you've experienced this, but for a long time, I think other people's gaze was so powerful for me that even when I was alone, I felt it. And I still do sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think spending time intentionally alone can help me to be recentered in my own gaze and to just be, you know, to like experience myself from the inside instead of trying to see myself how other people are seeing me and trying to like contort myself into how I think other people want me to be.
Mm-hmm. And I think I found my solitude to be the core part of my ability to do stuff like this podcast.
Right.
The ability to recenter, to find my own grounding away from the noise and the distractions that are a huge part of daily lives. Like yesterday, I deleted Instagram for a good 6 hours. But like, you know, unplugging from social media and from even being on my phone has been huge in cultivating a sense of recharge.
Yeah. So, I was saying this to Mal yesterday as we were at lunch, and I had my phone on the table because I wanted to keep an eye on the time because I had to work.
Mm-hmm.
But then as we were sitting there, I just noticed how reflexively every like 15 seconds I would pick up my phone. I'm like, what am I doing?
Yep.
It's just a habit. It's like an extension of your hand at a certain point.
It really is. As and we're both holding two iPhones. Yeah.
I mean, we're using it. For work. But I would still be holding it this way.
Yeah.
Either way, I even have this thing on the, my phone to make it easier for me to hold it for long periods of time.
Yeah.
You're going to have one soon, I bet.
And a belt bag. And a belt bag. To match.
But it's not really recharging at the end of the day because we're not really alone all the time. If we're, as much as, you know, I love my time on Twitter, but there's also times to turn off all of the screens, maybe.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. I'm like excited that you're saying that.
It's a different kind of recharge when you're not zoned into a screen.
But I think it comes back to that point we've been talking about, is that like it's the agency when you're realizing that you're doing something mindlessly.
Yes.
And the mindless absorption of information becomes, it bombards me. Like it overwhelms me. It's like a lot for me to take in, and then I'm not able to actually sit with, okay, I've taken in all this information. What do I want to do with it? Or how will I let it affect me? Because sometimes these things, we don't realize how it affects us until much later, but I become incredibly anxious as a person when I'm taking in all this information, which having all that anxiety from consuming media all day, all the time, I think that gets in the way of me being able to enjoy solitude because I'm so fixated on like, I'm missing out on something. I'm not able to actually sit here with myself and my own thoughts and be like, let's process, bitch.
Right.
So I see solitude as a means to preserve my energy, to recharge and to rest. And another part of the beauty of solitude, I think, is kind of the sense of self-reliance almost and self-acceptance that I can get from sitting with myself. I've been working so hard on trying to be more affirming of who I am or like where I'm at. And I think that it's begun with just me enjoying like my own company and indulging the like wacky zany things about myself as opposed to shying away from them and wanting to put on a mask that isn't actually me.
Totally. This is where devotional practices or spiritual practices have been really helpful for me, because the practice of sitting quietly and drawing tarot cards, for example, that's really recharging for me. And that's like really grounding in being in my body and connecting with all different parts of myself, connecting with my intuition and the feelings of my body, connecting then with my conscious mind and bringing all of those things together.
Mm-hmm.
That really helped me to base my experience on not only what's happening outside of me, but what's arising within me.
Mm-hmm. Like tuning in truly, like you were
exactly.
saying. Do you find that to be really meditative?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sitting with the deck and asking a question and then sitting and thinking about that question and shuffling a deck and then like choosing a card and looking at it and thinking about what comes up for me when I look at it.
Yeah.
Those are all practices where you have to be present with yourself. And it really does build an inner relationship.
Oh, that's so cool. Let's talk about that after, like when we're done this. Because okay. I'm like very curious about tarot. Yeah. But as like a recovering Christian, like,
you're like, it terrifies me.
Scary shit. Okay, well, I think now's a great time for us to close with our Women of Color of the Week.
Yeah.
And it is none other than the illustrious, most amazing Miss Maya Angelou, an essayist, poet, writer, queen mother. Miss Maya Angelou has written countless books, essays, poems, and you were the one who found this quote, which is awesome. It's from her second book of essays, Even the Stars Look Lonesome, which I think is just like a beautiful title for a book.
Because she's a poet.
She's a poet. Of course you're gonna make this shit sound beautiful. So the quote goes like this. Many believe that they need company at any cost, and certainly if a thing is desired at any cost, it will be obtained at all costs. We need to remember and to teach our children that solitude can be a much to be desired condition. Not only is it acceptable to be alone, at times it is positively to be wished for. It is the interludes between being in company that we talk to ourselves. In the silence, we listen to ourselves. Then we ask questions of ourselves. We describe ourselves, and in the quietude, we may even hear the voice of God.
Wow.
Like, damn.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm pretty sure when you, like, you sent that to me and I was like, damn, Maya.
Yeah, that was a literal
That was what I said. But like reading that and just thinking about that makes me so happy because she's telling us that it's acceptable to be alone and to be in solitude. And she shares that there's this like innate joy that can come from engaging with just ourselves and that we are enough. It's enough for us to just be with ourselves. We can communicate with ourselves. We can engage with ourselves. We can talk to ourselves. I think we don't really have conversations about how we talk to ourselves. Self-talk is a huge thing.
Yes, and our relationships with ourselves. Yeah. They're important. We really have to, like, prioritize time with ourselves.
Yeah, and I think I would imagine that, like, we have to do that as we're having community and being in relation with other people.
Totally.
But the part that really got me feeling type of way was that piece about hearing the voice of God. For me, I really just think of that as, like, hearing ourselves more clearly, with more clarity, with more profound sense of knowing and accepting that voice, tuning into what we want, what we need, and our own sense of self. I find that to be, like, incredibly nourishing.
Yeah, to me, that's alignment.
Yes.
That's that feeling that maybe it comes from within you. And I also think it is aligning with something greater than ourselves, which maybe she calls God.
Yeah.
You know, the saying, as above, so below.
Yes. And I know you love that.
I do. Yeah. And I just think being in right relationship with ourselves is the foundation from which we can be in right relationships with each other and with the earth and with everything else.
Yeah.
So it's the foundation for everything.
True.